In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, September 18th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Today it's Pentagon Solutions, where we take an hour-long deep dive into some of the challenges the Defense Department is facing, and we hear from experts both inside the building and outside. Today, an update on security measures at military installations. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, talking to reporters at the Pentagon today. Later in the hour, highlights of a House Armed Services Committee hearing with the Joint Chiefs of Staff offering testimony to the Armed Services Committee and taking questions. But we start with a highlight from the comments by Secretary Hagel and General Dempsey on the Navy Yard shooting. Secretary Hagel says he's employing a broad communication strategy and conducting multiple security reviews.
As the investigation proceeds into the shooting at the Washington Navy Yard, I've been consulting closely with DOD's leadership, including Secretary Mabus and Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Greener, as well as with our federal and law enforcement officials. I also conferred yesterday with the FBI Director, Dr. Comey, the Attorney General, Attorney General Holder, and President Obama. First, our thoughts and our prayers are with the victims, their families, and all who have been affected by what happened at the Navy shipyard on Monday. We will grieve, we will remember, and we will comfort each other. The Department of Defense is a strong and resilient community, and we will do everything we can to help our colleagues at the Navy Yard get through this terrible, terrible time. In the coming days, more information will come to light about what happened, about what went wrong, and importantly, what must be fixed. Yesterday, I directed two department-wide reviews. These reviews will be led by Deputy Secretary Ash Carter, and we will do everything possible to prevent this from happening again. First, I directed a review of physical security and access procedures at all DOD installations worldwide. The highest responsibilities leaders have is to take care of their people, and our people deserve safe and secure workplaces wherever they are. Second, Deputy Secretary Carter will also lead a review of DOD's practices and procedures for granting and renewing security clearances, including those held by contractors. This review will be closely coordinated with other federal agencies currently examining these procedures, including the DNI and OMB. I've also directed that an independent panel be established. This independent panel will conduct its own assessment of security at DOD facilities and our security clearance procedures and practices. The panel's work will strengthen Secretary Carter's efforts, and they will provide their findings directly to me. The Department of Defense will carefully examine the assessments, the conclusions, and recommendations of these reviews, and we will effectively implement them. As you know, the Navy is also conducting its own review, and those results will feed into the broader DOD review worldwide. Where there are gaps, we will close them. Where there are inadequacies, we will address them. And where there are failures, we will correct them. We owe the victims, their families, and all our people nothing less. General Dempsey.
Thanks, Mr. Secretary. I also want to add my condolences over Monday's horrific shootings at the Navy Yard. My heart goes out to the families of our fallen, to those injured during the attack, their coworkers, and to the entire Navy family. While I cannot discuss the details of an ongoing investigation, I can discuss the bravery of the first responders. Even in the midst of tragedy, there are moments of triumph. The most visible feats were accomplished by professionals, our military, police, and EMTs, but there were other unseen moments equally heroic. I was especially inspired by the story of Omar Grant, a Navy Yard civilian who helped a blind colleague to safety as they exited Building 197 in the middle of the shooting. Omar refused to leave his friend behind. The urge to run toward danger to help someone in need is a testament to an American's character. Our military family will continue to help those in need. Secretary of the Navy has granted designee status to provide medical care to those injured in the attacks. We've also mobilized teams of military chaplains throughout the area to minister to those in need, and counseling services are available for all of those affected by Monday's rampage. And I look forward to your questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Secretary, and to the general public who sees sort of the sort of string of events, Snowden, Hassan, Bradley Manning, and now this, it sort of looks as though there are incidents, there are studies, and something happens again. You did extensive studies after the Hassan incident. So can you talk about what changes were not made then that should have been made? Are there gaps? And when you look at security clearances, should we lower the bar to include more personal information or take note of greater personal information in order to protect safety? Where is that line?
Well, first, obviously, something went wrong. That's the point of the directives that I have made in the reviews that will go forward. As I said in my comments, we will review everything. And from that review, the intensity of that review, the depth and the width of that review, we would hope that we will find some answers to how we do it better. How can we do it better? The fact is, starting with the tragedy of what happened Monday, and you mentioned other tragedies, we don't live in a risk-free society. And every day, all the millions of DOD employees, whether they're uniform or civilian, that come to work, help this country, contribute to the security and safety of this country, there's always some risk to that. And that isn't a good answer. That's not good enough. They deserve the security of a safe environment. We will find those gaps, as I said, and we will fix those gaps. So to go beyond that in the specific areas of your questions, I would leave that to the review. There are many questions that are going to be asked, need to be asked, many reviews, and the intensity of those reviews have to go down to every aspect, the security of our physical premises, the security clearance, standards of that security clearance, are they strong enough? Why do we do certain things the way we do? We need answers, and we will find those answers.
Well, I just add that what the Secretary said, in terms of what we changed after some of those earlier incidents that early indications are actually contributed to a less horrific outcome, were alert notices, coordination in advance of crises with other agencies of government, training for employees and law enforcement on active shooter scenarios. So, I mean, some of the things we did as a result of those earlier incidents, we believe, actually reaped the benefit we intended. The clearance piece of this is one I think we very clearly have to take another look at, and the Secretary's directed us to do so.
That's the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, speaking at a news conference today at the Pentagon. And you can read more about the security clearance review at federalnewsradio.com right now. When we come back on Pentagon Solutions, today's House Armed Services Committee hearing on the fiscal 2014 outlook for the Department of Defense, comments from members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and you'll hear them when we come back on Federal News Radio.
Reliable, capable, adaptable, and survivable are all words that describe the LPD-17 San Antonio class of amphibious warships. The brave sailors and Marines who protect our nation deserve nothing less than a ship that can take them into harm's way and, most importantly, bring them safely home again. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, we're proud to be building these ships that have proven their capability to achieve multiple missions. LPD-17, an able class.
At VAE Systems, protecting troops is always a top priority. That's why we create combat vehicles that not only help them win the fight, but bring them back home. Our vehicles are designed from the ground up with the latest integrated solutions, all with troops in mind. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's VAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at vaesystems.com/nextfront.
Accenture, high performance delivered. It's how we help clients take on their most complex challenges. We helped process $650 billion in benefit payments for U.S. federal organizations. And we helped eliminate $348 million in U.S. federal fleet, inventory, and freight costs. With unmatched capabilities across defense, public safety, and civilian, Accenture consistently delivers results at speed. To learn more, visit Accenture.com/federal or follow us on Twitter at Accenture Fed.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
Today's Human Capital Management Report brought to you by The Graduate School.
The size of the federal workforce is getting smaller. There are now 2.1 million feds, about the same number as in 2009, according to data compiled by the Partnership for Public Service. A dip in hiring is part of the reason for the retraction. Fewer than 90,000 new employees were hired last year. At the same time, more feds have been leaving government service to retire or for jobs in the private sector. Over 100,000 federal employees left agencies in 2012.
Achieving workforce development goals in today's environment can be challenging, but Graduate School USA offers a creative approach to training solutions and more than 90 years of training excellence. Ranked as the most affordable and overall best choice for federal training, the school offers hundreds of top-quality courses, including customized programs designed for your budget and your needs. Get more out of your training budget. Visit graduateschool.edu. That's graduateschool.edu.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Thursday's Federal Drive. Attorney Greg Rinke, formerly a judge advocate general, joins us with the legal angle on the security clearance issue with the Navy Yard. Plus, USAID has a better handle on its own performance thanks to an update to its foreign assistance dashboard. The deputy administrator tells us how they did it. Those stories and much more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, Pentagon Solutions, every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour. And you're hearing highlights now from a House Armed Services Committee hearing called Planning for Sequestration in Fiscal 2014 and Perspectives of the Military Services on the Strategic Choices and Management Review. General James Amos, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Jonathan Greenert, Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno, and Air Force Chief of Staff General Mark Welsh, the witnesses at this hearing. And in our first highlight of the hearing, General Odierno says sequestration's undermining the success of some of the most critical military operations the United States is doing today.
The United States has drawn down military forces at the close of every war, and today is no different. This time, however, we are drawing down our army before a war is over, and at a time when there's grave uncertainty in the international security environment that we witness every single day. Today, the total army, the active army, the Army National Guard, the U.S. Army Reserves remains heavily committed in operations overseas and at home. More than 70,000 soldiers are deployed as we sit here today, including 50,000 soldiers in Afghanistan and nearly 88,000 soldiers are forward stationed across the globe. During my more than 37 years of service, the U.S. Army has deployed soldiers to fight in more than 10 conflicts, including the longest war in our nation's history in Afghanistan. No one can predict where the next contingency will arise that will require the employment of ground forces. We only know the lessons of the past. In every decade since World War II, the United States has deployed U.S. Army soldiers to defend our national security interests. There are some who have suggested there will be no land wars in the future. While I wish that were true, unfortunately, there is little to convince me that we will not ask our soldiers to deploy again in the future. We have also learned from previous drawdowns that the full burden of an unprepared and hollow force will fall directly on the shoulders of our men and women in uniform. We have experienced this too many times in our nation's history to repeat this egregious error again. As Chief of Staff, it's my responsibility to provide my best military advice in order to ensure that we have an Army that will meet our national security needs in the complex, uncertain environment of the future. It is imperative that we preserve the full range of strategic options for the Commander-in-Chief, the Secretary of Defense, and the Congress. Together, we must ensure our Army can deliver a trained and ready force that deters conflict, but when necessary, has the capability and capacity to execute a sustained, successful major combat operation. The Budget Control Act with sequestration simply does not allow us to do this. If Congress does not act to mitigate the magnitude and speed of the reductions under the BCA with sequestration, the Army will not be able to fully execute the requirements of the 2012 Defense Strategic Guidance. By the end of FY14, we'll have significantly degraded readiness, in which 85% of our active and reserve brigade combat teams will not be prepared for contingency requirements. From fiscal year 14 to FY17, as we continue to draw down and restructure the Army into a smaller force, the Army will continue to have degraded readiness and extensive modernization program shortfalls. We'll be required to end, restructure, or delay over 100 acquisition programs, putting at risk the ground combat vehicle program, the Armed Aerial Scout, the production and modernization of our other aviation programs, system upgrades for unmanned aerial vehicles, and the modernization of our air defense command and control systems, just to name a few. Only in FY18 to FY23 will we begin to rebalance readiness and modernization, but this will come at the expense of significant reductions in end strength and force structure. The Army will be faced to take further end strength cuts from a wartime high of 570,000 in the active Army, 358,000 in the Army National Guard, and 205,000 in the U.S. Army Reserves, to no more than 420,000 in the active Army, 315,000 in the Army National Guard, and 185,000 in the U.S. Army Reserves. This will represent a total Army end strength reduction of more than 18% over 7 years, a 26% reduction in the Army, in the active Army, a 12% reduction in the Army National Guard, and a 9% reduction in the U.S. Army Reserves. Additionally, this will result in a 45% reduction in active Army brigade combat teams. In my view, these reductions will put at substantial risk our ability to conduct even one sustained major combat operation. Ultimately, the size of the Army will be determined by the guidance and funding provided by Congress. It is imperative that Congress not implement the tool of sequestration. I do not consider myself an alarmist. I consider myself a realist. Today's international environment and its emerging threats require a joint force with a ground component that has the capability and the capacity to deter and compel our adversaries who threaten our national security interests. The Budget Control Act and sequestration severely threaten our ability to do this.
That's the Chief of Staff of the Army, General Ray Odierno, at a hearing of the House Armed Services Committee on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. More highlights from the House Armed Services Committee hearing when we come back on Pentagon Solutions on In Depth with Francis Rose. You're listening to Federal News Radio.
Are you ready to reinvent your career? Let the Virginia Tech Executive MBA program help get you there. This affordable 18-month program is conveniently located in Arlington, Virginia, with classes meeting every other Friday and Saturday. Build your skills and take your career to the next level, knowing that their distinguished faculty offer tools that you can utilize at work immediately. Reinvent your future with Virginia Tech, now accepting applications for spring 2014. Google Virginia Tech EMBA.
Source America isn't a new country, but it is a place that creates job opportunities for an incredible workforce. People with significant disabilities. People who are fiercely dedicated to high-quality work and amaze federal customers with the wide array of jobs they do. As an Ability One authorized enterprise, we make the federal procurement process a smooth one. Learn more at sourceamerica.org.
You don't need two washing machines.
You don't need two cappuccino makers.
Or two snowblowers.
Or two bad knees.
No, you don't need two t-shirts that say, "Kiss me, I'm Irish."
Definitely not.
And your government agency doesn't need two mobility management solutions.
It's unproductive, costly, and annoying.
Kinda like a commercial with two announcers.
Introducing the Citrix Zen Mobile Solution. The mobility management solution that gives your employees the freedom to work from anywhere on any device. And gives you the ability to secure and control devices without having to deploy multiple solutions.
With Citrix Zen Mobile, you can secure and manage your workforce devices, apps, and data from one centralized point.
Your employees get secure email, browsing, and a unified app store.
And you can isolate sensitive apps and data using Citrix Mobile App Containerization technology.
Citrix offers the only end-to-end enterprise mobility management solution you need to provide a completely flexible and secure mobile workplace.
Visit citrix.com/US government to learn more.
That's citrix.com/US government.
You always have to have the last word.
Right.
Are you paying too much on your credit card annual percentage rates? Get the State Department Federal Credit Union credit card with a low 6.99 annual percentage rate. The SDFCU Visa Platinum card has EMV chip-enabled technology. This provides added security when spending overseas, and you'll save with no foreign transaction fees. Also, enjoy a generous rewards program and earn points toward even more travel. Visit SDFCU.org to apply online today. That's SDFCU.org. SDFCU is federally insured by NCUA, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Mouth, germs, and cancer. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Researchers suspect a germ in the mouth could raise the risk of colon cancer. Scientists at Case Western Reserve University School of Dental Medicine in Cleveland say it's the bacterium known as FN, which lives in the mouth and can be carried to other body sites. The researchers say FN attaches to a cell receptor in the colon. The process can spur cancer cell growth, so researcher Yiping Han created a substance that blocks the process experimentally. She can't tell whether it will lead to a treatment, so she advises people to control mouth microbes the way we know.
Practice good oral hygiene and keep the gum healthy, because the mouth is the gateway to our health.
The study in the journal Cell, Hosts, and Microbe was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Be a part of the USO of Metropolitan Washington's annual Stars and Stripes business-to-business networking event and fundraiser for the troops on October 4th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. Mingle with top corporate executives and celebrities, nosh on great food, and bid on amazing auction items. Join in as the USO Metro announces the 2013 Circle of Stars, honoring the top corporate donors for the year. Event sponsorships are still available. To learn more, visit WTOP.com, search charities.
Now your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update, afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour. The term cybersecurity is too broad for emerging jobs in the information technology field, according to the National Research Council. The NRC says in order to create specific professional standards for cybersecurity positions, the cyber workforce needs to categorize different kinds of cyber jobs and document how much training is required for each one. The NRC says until that happens, it's near impossible to predict how many cybersecurity employees an agency will need in the future. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions and highlights today of a House Armed Services Committee hearing from this morning called Planning for Sequestration in Fiscal 2014, Perspectives of the Military Services on the Strategic Choices and Management Review. The lineup includes General James Amos, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Jonathan Greenard, Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno, and Air Force Chief of Staff General Mark Welch. In this highlight, Admiral Greenard takes a moment to reflect on Monday's shooting at the Washington Navy Yard.
Chairman, we lost shipmates on Monday. The Secretary of the Navy and I and our leadership have our full attention on ensuring that the victims' families, co-workers, and their co-workers are provided with the care and the support that they need and that they deserve during this difficult time. We are grateful for the teamwork and the heroism which the first responders showed when they reacted, and we are working closely with the FBI and other law enforcement authorities to conclude this investigation. Now, as directed yesterday by the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of the Navy, and me, we are reviewing the security procedures and the access control for all our Navy installations around the world. I expect to have a rapid review completed within 2 weeks, which, of course, we will share with you. Nothing matters more to us than the safety and security of our people. I know you are aware of the DOG, the Department of Defense IG report released yesterday that cites cost control measures as a potential cause for vulnerabilities in contractor access procedures for our bases. Chairman, I've read the report. We are reviewing it right now, and to the degree we have vulnerabilities, we'll correct them, and we'll do it expeditiously. We are grateful to the DOD IG for working with us on this, and I can assure you, however, that the cost control measures that were mentioned in this report have nothing to do with budget shortfalls or sequestration itself. We don't cut budgetary corners for security, Chairman. The two are unrelated. Now, if something needs added or changed, we'll fix it right away. Further, we will continue to work closely with the Department of Defense IG staff, and we'll reconcile all these recommendations in this report I just held in my hand. Again, nothing is more important to me, Chairman. Now, I'd like to address, with the time remaining, two more points: our budget situation and our plan in fiscal year 2014 and the long-term impacts of sequestration. Mr. Chairman, presence remains the mandate for the Navy. We have to operate forward where it matters, and we got to be ready when it matters. Recent events have clearly demonstrated our ability to do that. Quickly, we positioned ourselves and we offered options to the President in this past month. This ability also reassures our allies, and it ensures that U.S. interests around the world are properly served. Now, as we prepare for 2014, sequestration is going to further reduce our readiness. The impacts of sequestration will be realized in two main categories: operations and maintenance, and in our investments. There are several operational impacts, but the most concerning to me is that reductions in operation and maintenance accounts is going to result in having only one non-deployed carrier strike group and one amphibious ready group trained and ready for surge operations. We will be forced to cancel maintenance. This will inevitably lead to reduced life for our ships and for our aircraft. Assure, we will again conduct only safety essential renovation of facilities, and it will further increase the backlog in this area. We will probably be compelled to keep a hiring freeze in place for most of our civilian positions, and that will, of course, affect the spectrum and the balance of our civilian force. We will not be able to use prior year funds to mitigate sequestration cuts in our investment accounts like we could in fiscal year 13. So without congressional action, we will lose at least a Virginia-class submarine, a littoral combat ship, and an afloat forward staging base. And we will be forced to delay the delivery of the next aircraft carrier, the Ford, and we'll delay the midlife overhaul of the George Washington aircraft carrier. Also, we'll cancel procurement of 11 tactical aircraft. The key to a balanced portfolio, Chairman, is a spending bill and the ability to transfer money. We need to transfer, I think, about $1 billion into the operations and maintenance account and about $1 billion into our procurement accounts post-sequestration, mostly so we can get shipbuilding back on track and to meet our essential needs. We'll need to do this by January. Other program deliveries of programs and weapon systems may be delayed regardless, depending on the authority that we are granted to reapportion funds between accounts. Now, when it comes to the strategic choices and management review, it's complete, and the Navy's focus now is on crafting a balanced portfolio of programs within the fiscal guidance that we were provided. More details of what we're doing are outlined in my written statement, which I request be entered for the record. In summary, we will maintain a credible and monitored sea-based strategic deterrent. That's our number one program. We will maximize forward presence as I passed to you before. That's what we need to do. And we will use ready deployed forces to do that. And we'll continue investing in asymmetric capabilities. While with this committee's help, we'll do our best to sustain a relevant industrial base. However, in a given fiscal scenario within the Budget Control Act cost caps, there are numerous missions that are in the Defense Strategic Guidance passed that we signed up to a few years ago we can't perform. These are laid out in great detail in my written statement, and I'll save you going through each and every one of these in my oral statement here. But applying one fiscal and programmatic scenario, we would result in a fleet inventory of about 255 ships in 2020. That's our benchmark year for the Defense Strategic Guidance. That's about 30 less than today. It's about 40 less than was in our PresBud submission, and it's 51 less than our force structure assessment of 306 ships. So, Mr. Chairman, I understand the pressing need for the nation to get its fiscal house in order, and I'm on board with that, but I think we need to do it. I think it's imperative that we do it in a thoughtful manner to ensure that we sustain appropriate warfighting capability, that we have proper forward presence and readiness. Those are the attributes we depend on from our Navy, from your Navy. I look forward to working with the Congress to find solutions that will ensure our Navy retains the ability to organize, to train, and to equip the great sailors in defense of our nation who operate in concert with the Marine Corps.
That is the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Jonathan Greenert, on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, speaking at a House Armed Services Committee hearing today called Planning for Sequestration in Fiscal 14 and Perspectives of the Military Services on the Strategic Choices and Management Review. And more from this hearing when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This week's Experts in Health topic is breastfeeding benefits for babies, featuring Dr. Maia Jackson, a pediatrician with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Manassas Medical Center.
Breastfeeding is a natural way to provide all the nutrition your new baby needs. Kaiser Permanente and the American Academy of Pediatrics recommend exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life. There are many reasons to consider breastfeeding. Breast milk is easier for your baby to digest. It provides antibodies that protect your baby from illnesses, including ear infections, asthma, and upper respiratory tract infections. Holding your baby close when breastfeeding helps establish a strong bond. Studies have shown that breastfed babies are at a lower risk of childhood obesity. While breastfeeding can be challenging at the beginning, it often gets easier as time passes.
Dr. Jackson was recently recognized as a Super Doctor Rising Star by the Washington Post. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Read something interesting on federalnewsradio.com and want to share it with your colleagues and friends? Our enhanced articles make it easier than ever to recommend a story to your Facebook friends, tweet it out to your followers, email it to your colleagues, and now share the story directly with your connections on LinkedIn and Google+. One click is all it takes to share the latest news affecting federal employees and government contractors. FederalNewsRadio.com.
DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Wednesday afternoons at 3, In-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour. DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions, where every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour, we look at challenges the Pentagon is dealing with, and we hear from experts inside and outside the building about how to deal with those challenges. Sequestration's one of them, planning for sequestration in fiscal 14, and perspectives of the military services on the Strategic Choices and Management Review, the title of a hearing in the House Armed Services Committee this morning. The witnesses include Marine Corps Commandant General James Amos, Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Jonathan Greenard, Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno, and Air Force Chief of Staff General Mark Welsh, each of them contributing various times throughout this hearing. And in this highlight, part of your DOD report brought to you by BAE Systems Afternoons at 40 After, Marine Corps Commandant General James Amos talks about the possibility of sequestration's extension and says it's coming at a particularly challenging time for the Defense Department.
Sequestration, by its scale and inflexibility, will significantly stress our force, degrade readiness, and create a significant risk to our national security, all at a time of strategic rebalancing, all done on a world stage that is chaotic and volatile. I urge this committee and the members of Congress to consider the full range of risks across the joint force, not just for my service, but for all of us, and ask for your continued assistance in mitigating the effects of sequestration. Our nation expects a force capable of responding to a crisis anywhere around the globe at a moment's notice. Readiness is the critical measure of our ability to be able to do that. This is our nation's strategic hedge against uncertainty. In times of crisis, four deployed naval forces provide decision makers with immediate options that can control escalation, buy time, create decision space for our national leaders, and enable joint follow-on forces. The Marine Corps' high readiness levels mitigate the risks inherent in an uncertain world by responding to a wide range of capabilities across real-world scenarios. Your Marines remain a constant, effective hedge against the unexpected and provide the American people a national insurance policy. Our world is a dangerous place, and America must always be ready to meet emerging crises that threaten our national security interests. As a member of the Joint Chiefs, I am particularly concerned about the long-lasting and devastating impacts of sequestration. The very nature of sequestration erodes both Marine Corps readiness and that of the joint force. Scheduled tiered readiness is not an option for the United States Marine Corps. We must be prepared when a crisis erupts. Over the last year, we have maintained our equipment readiness to the maximum extent possible. Maintenance costs are increasing, and our Marines are working longer hours to keep aging equipment running. We have maintained the near-term readiness of our forward-deployed forces and our next-to-deploy forces at the expense of infrastructure and sustainment and modernization programs. This can't continue over the long haul. We are in a catch-22. If we are to succeed on future battlefields, we must modernize and we must care for our infrastructure and our training facilities. Sequestration is already starting to degrade our infrastructure. We have been forced to reprioritize infrastructure maintenance and recapitalization efforts on our facilities to be able to sustain a ready force. Soon there will be little left within these accounts to offset our readiness requirements. Over my 43-year career as a United States Marine, I have seen the effects of strategic miscalculations resulting from declining resources and budget-driven strategies that resulted in wholesale force cuts. We only need to look back to the 1990s when our nation executed the first drawdown of the all-volunteer force. Following the Gulf War, we saw firsthand how deep cuts in our military produced unintended consequences and increased risk to our nation. During the mid to late 90s, we were challenged by a host of limited conflicts in Liberia, Somalia, Kosovo, and along with the bombing of our East African embassies. By the end of the decade, the U.S. military had reduced its active duty force by 25%. Operations and maintenance funds were slashed. Peacetime deployment tempo increased, wearing down the force and wearing down our families. For this very reason, Congress began to require the services to track and to report our deployment tempo. The force was overly stressed, and we considered this to be peacetime. We see these same problems today. In order to meet the requirements of the Defense Strategic Guidance, I need a Marine Corps of 186,800 active duty Marines. A force of 186.8 allows us to meet our steady state requirements as well as be able to go to war. It preserves a 1-3 dwell for our Marines. Our share of the 2011 Budget Control Act's $487 billion reduction cut our end strength to 182,000. Based on sequestration, I simply cannot afford a force that size. Sequestration will force us to plow through scarce resources, funding our old equipment and weapon systems in an attempt to keep them alive and functional. We will be forced to reduce or cancel modernization programs and infrastructure investments in order to maintain readiness for those deployed and next-to-deploy units. Money that should be available for procuring new equipment will be rerouted into maintenance and spare accounts for our legacy equipment. This includes our 42-year-old Nixon-era amphibious assault vehicle. In February, we initiated a parallel study to the Department of Defense's Strategic Choices Management Review. Our internal review redesigned the Marine Corps to a force that I could simply afford under sequestration. This was not a strategy-driven effort. This was a budget-driven effort. Our exhaustive research, backed by independent analysis, and determined that a force of 174,000 Marines is the smallest force that can meet mission requirements. This is a force with levels of risk that are minimally acceptable. For instance, assuming that global requirements for Marine forces remain the same over the foreseeable future, a force of 174,000 will drive the Marine Corps to a 1-2 dwell for virtually all Marine units. Gone 6 months, home 12 months, gone 6 months. Furthermore, the 174K force accepts risk when our nation commits itself to its next major theater war. In plain terms, we will have 11 fewer combat arms battalions, 14 fewer aircraft squadrons to swiftly defeat our adversary. This is a single major contingency operation force that would deploy and fight until the war's end. In other words, we would come home when the war was over. Marines who joined the Corps during that period would likely go from drill field to battlefield. Across the joint force, America will begin to see shortfalls in the military's ability to accomplish its national strategy. Today, we are seeing only the tip of the iceberg. Tomorrow's Marines will face violent extremism, battles for influence, and natural disasters. Developing states and non-state actors will acquire new technology and advanced conventional weapons that will challenge our ability to project power and gain access. In order to be effective in this new environment, we must maintain our forward influence, our strategic mobility, power projection, and rapid response capabilities that Marines are known for today. We will balance an increasing force. We will balance an increasing focus on the Asia-Pacific region with a sustainable emphasis in the Middle East and African littorals.
That's Marine Corps Commandant General James Amos bringing you your DoD report brought, by BAE Systems afternoons at 40 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio, and more from this hearing of the House Armed Services Committee from this morning on Federal News Radio when we come back. General Amos accompanied by Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Jonathan Greenard, Army Chief General Ray Odierno, and Air Force Chief General Mark Welsh, all of them testifying to the House Armed Services Committee. And more from this hearing when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose.
What is the power of Ingenuity? It's intelligent surveillance and reconnaissance solutions in the air and in space. It's integrated electronic warfare systems protecting air crews aboard fixed and rotary wing aircraft. It's a new generation of aircraft structures, components, and assemblies. It's integrated logistics support and sustainment solutions, and it all comes from Excellus. Visit Excellus this week at booth 609 during AFA 2013. Excellus, the power of ingenuity.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliance.com.
To learn more, visit AdvancedAlliant.com.
Agency of the Month is brought to you by CenturyLink from this month's agency, Department of the Navy.
Nick Erden is Director of Transformation for the Navy. He describes a game to develop business practices.
It's kind of like a card game. We set out a handful of seed cards, cards that just start the incubatorial process of ideating on a concept. And we lay down those idea cards, and they're fairly short. Each card then gets played on by one of the players.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Power of Attorney Radio, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Mr. Joseph Caro of the United States Coast Guard, who's going to be talking about boating safety. Power of Attorney is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Reston and servicing the entire D.C. metro area. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Be a part of the USO of Metropolitan Washington's annual Stars and Stripes business-to-business networking event and fundraiser for the troops on October 4th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. Mingle with top corporate executives and celebrities. Nosh on great food and bid on amazing auction items. Join in as the USO Metro announces the 2013 Circle of Stars, honoring the top corporate donors for the year. Event sponsorships are still available. To learn more, visit WTOP.com, search charities.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're hearing highlights of the House Armed Services Committee hearing from today on Pentagon solutions, sequestration in the coming fiscal year, and a review of the Strategic Choices and Management Review, the topics at hand. The witnesses at the hearing, the four chiefs, General James Amos of the Marine Corps, Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Jonathan Greenert, Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno, and Air Force Chief General Mark Welsh. And in this highlight, General Welsh talks about how the Air Force is planning for fiscal 14 in the wake of the recent skimmer.
The results of the skimmer were sobering, I think, to all of us. And if sequestration remains in place for FY14, the Air Force will be forced to cut flying hours by up to 15%. And within 3 to 4 months, many of our flying units will not be able to maintain mission readiness, will cancel or significantly curtail major exercises again, and will reduce our initial pilot production targets, which we were able to avoid in FY13. Over the long term, of course, it will significantly impact our force structure, readiness, and modernization. For force structure, over the next 5 years, we could be forced to cut up to 25,000 total force airmen, which is about 4% of our people. We also will probably have to cut up to 550 aircraft, about 9% of our inventory. And to achieve the necessary savings in aircraft force structure, we'll be forced to divest entire fleets of aircraft. We can't do it by cutting a few aircraft from each fleet. As we look at which force structure we need to maintain, we will prioritize global, long-range capabilities and multi-role platforms required to operate in a highly contested environment. Other platforms will be at risk. We plan to protect readiness to the maximum extent possible. We also plan to prioritize full-spectrum training, because if we're not ready for all possible scenarios, we'll be forced to accept what I believe is unnecessary risk, which means we may not get there in time, it may take the joint team longer to win, and our people will be placed at greater risk. If sequestration continues, our modernization recapitalization forecasts are bleak. It will impact every one of our programs. These disruptions will, over time, cost more money to rectify contract breaches, raise unit costs, and delay delivery of critical equipment. We're looking at cutting as many as 50% of our modernization programs if the ALT-POM is actually the way we go. We will favor recapitalization over modernization whenever that decision is required. That's why our top three acquisition priorities will remain the KC-46, the F-35, and the long-range strike bomber. The United States Air Force is the best in the world and is a vital piece of the world's best military team. That won't change even if sequester persists. And when called, we will answer and we will win. But the impacts are going to be significant, and the risk occurs from readiness in the ways it impacts our airmen.
That's Air Force Chief of Staff General Mark Welsh at a hearing of the House Armed Services Committee on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, you can find a video link so you can watch that hearing anytime you want. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in minutes on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.